artists.
And you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.FM. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Be there. Or be square.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener supported, non-commercial radio. And welcome. This is Impact, the show about people making an impact in their community. I'm your host, Mark Hall, with my very special guest today, Rose Muth. Hi, Rose.
Hey, how are you?
Good. You?
I'm doing well.
And you are the president of the Motor City Chapter of the Women's Marine Association.
Yes, I am. As of last month, I was sworn in, and I'm taking charge of this great organization we have here in the community. And it's a two-year term, so I was voted in by the members, and I am the youngest member of our chapter, so I'm pretty excited to bring new ideas and new things to our chapter, which is already, you know, great and doing good things. So I am very excited.
Now, Women Marine, when did you serve? How long did you...
I joined the Marine Corps in 2002. I got out in 2010. I was a combat correspondent in the Marine Corps. We're also known as PAO, which is public affairs. I was a journalist and a broadcaster, so I went through school for both MOSs, or Marine Occupation or Military Occupational Specialty is what MOS stands for. I was able to serve overseas. I wrote a number of news articles that were published throughout the world. I sent news releases home for the Marines that I wrote about, got their story out there in the world, and also just to like make their hometowns proud.
So people curious about you and where you've been can still Google those.
Actually, yes. I was trying to figure out if some of my articles were still there. You actually can Google my name, and it'll pull up some articles that I wrote while I was in the Marine Corps. And They're still around, a couple around there, but yep, I'm still on Google, so I'm still relevant.
So now you take this experience, you come home, start a new life for yourself.
Yes, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I still wanted to work with the government, so I went ahead and I worked with Homeland Security. I did that for quite a while. And I actually transferred to Michigan in 2015 with my job. And actually last year I decided to transition into something different and follow my passions. So I am actually attending culinary school, and my dream was to be a chef. So I'm going to be Chef Rose in about a year and a half.
Talk about putting down swords and picking up plowshares.
Yeah, so the great thing about the Marine Corps and being in public affairs is that you have a little bit of leeway to be a little creative. You know, they do have our structure of what we can write and stuff, but, you know, you can throw your own little flair into some things and the photography and things like that. But I had a great time, and I've always been a creative person, so to bring that into another field, which is food, which I'm very passionate about too, was really neat. And to be able to have the opportunity from the military with the GI Bill to be able to go back to school and follow my passion has been great.
And so now you say you came to Michigan in 2015, mm-hmm. and here your peers are looking at you, the youngest member of the group, and saying, she's got what we want to lead the group. That says something about you.
I think I have a very outgoing personality, but I feel like, I do have a lot to offer, and I was very humbled that they would choose me to be their new president, because Marianne Merritt has been our chapter president for the last 6-7 years, and she's done amazing things in our community throughout the Detroit area. So I knew stepping into her shoes, I'd have big shoes to fill and to keep our momentum going with all the great things we have going on in the community. So I have my goals that I'd like to do for the chapter, and I have her guidance because she's still, you know, there for me, and she's still a big part of our chapter as our media relations coordinator. She does all our fundraising, most of it, I should say. So she's taken on that role to support me, and I'm still learning a lot of baby steps. I still am going through to learn what she's been doing. But I was surprised when I moved here because I'm part of the chapter, the Women Marines Association in like DC. And it's a huge chapter, very big chapter, and they do things. But when I moved to Michigan, Marianne was the president for like 6-7 years. The amount of stuff that they do here, it blew my mind. When I went to one meeting, the first meeting, I was like, wow, this is so much different. Like, it's like your home, your friends, like people you have a lot. I'm the youngest in the chapter. Our oldest is a World War II vet. Her name is Sally.
Met her.
We had her birthday to get together this last meeting in February. Mm-hmm. But you should come out in August. We're doing our huge picnic, and it's at one of the ladies. She got this old Victorian mansion, and I think it sits on 20 acres, and that's where we're doing our big picnic. So we're going to have all kinds of people come in, and it's just going to be like a whole big like shindig, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And now that I've taken over, you know, I have to find the meeting places for us. And we try to keep it fun. There's about 20 members who come usually regularly that are really part of the chapter. And over like Christmas time, we've had so much stuff. We had a packing party. They sent over $10,000 worth of boxes, you know, overseas. The community of Romeo. Marianne has done such – I felt so much pressure, though, because I was like, man, Marianne has done so much. Can I keep up with the momentum of Marianne? Because –
big boots to fill.
Yeah, that whole town has come together and raised so much money for us. And now in September, we're doing a golf tournament for Major Megan McClung. She's the first female naval officer graduate that passed away, got killed in action in 2006. She's the first public affair officer that was killed in action. There's a lot of things that she did. She was a huge part of like the running community. They have an award for her at the Marine Corps Marathon. They call it the Penguin Award. It's the last finisher of the Marine Corps Marathon because they didn't quit. They kept going, and they call it the Penguin Award, and she's the one who started it, and they keep it going now. And so we're trying to raise enough money to make it a perpetual scholarship to where it's every single year. So we have a huge golf tournament in September, and me and Marianne and I are organizing that, and we're trying to get like the word out in the community and get people, we're trying to get, you know, yep.
Let's at get
least,
the word.
Yeah, get at least 100 people to come and golf. Because,
where?
It's at the Greystone Golf Course in Romeo, Washington Township. Beautiful golf course.
The date is when?
September 16th. It starts at 1 o'clock. That's the tee time.
And how would people register?
Well, we're getting the event page now. We're going to put that together because I'm doing registration packets and stuff now. Once I get that all bundled together, they can go online and register. And
how do people find the Women's Marine Association?
We have a Facebook page. So we have a website, womenmarines.org, and then we actually have Facebook pages. So each chapter has a Facebook page, but we have a overall page, like the Women Marines Association on Facebook. There's a Facebook page, but the best way is through the womenmarines.org, like our website. And now, Marianne is the one that answers the emails because she's our public affairs officer.
So now would you go to womensmarine.org and then go /Michigan or?
No, you can go on there and there's actually a chapter locator and okay. You can find us. On Facebook, we're like Women Marines Association Motor City Chapter. And that's how you can find us on there and like message us or whatever. Now with the group though, you can't join the group unless you're like a, you know, Women Marine.
Right.
But you can contact us through there. And like I said, sometimes the easiest is just through our website because Marianne directly receives it and she's our public affairs officer for all of the Women Marines Association. So anything that comes about Michigan, she'll get it and then she passes it along.
Now, you can't join unless you serve,
yeah.
Unless you're a woman who served in the Corps. However, if your father, son, husband, cousin, of a woman who served, you can support the organization?
Yes, you can. We have actually an auxiliary for the Women Marines Association. Mary Ann Sun actually is the president of that. And it's the, I believe it's the Order of the Green Garter. I have to double check. But they have an auxiliary, so you can support us. And when we do community service events, they actually come and support us. And they come and volunteer. And when we have our conference, we have a, what do you call that when it's every 2 years?
Biannual
conference. They actually come too. And they support and help set up and, you know, whatever we need during the conference, they actually come and support us. They do fundraising on their own also to help support our organization. And they do their own community service and things like that. And it can be any family member. You don't even have to be military related. We have people who are just in the community and they love us so much that they join the auxiliary just so that they can just be a part of the organization.
Yep.
You just want to be, yeah, just support the troops. They don't even care. They're like, oh, you guys support the military. I want to support the military. You know, like I said, we send care packages and stuff. And they're like, hey, what can I do?
Tell us more about that care package.
So they call it like a taste of home when they send the care packages. So people will contact us and say, hey, I have a brother, sister, whatever friend that's getting deployed. And we will add them to our list. And basically, the we get the USPS boxes, the priority mail boxes, and we stuff it as full as we can get it. And then we ship those overseas to different units. And a lot of them will reach out to us and write us a letter, a thank you letter, or they send us pictures with the boxes. We do those at least twice a year. Like I said, in November, they did a packing party, and they sent about $11,000 worth of boxes. Each box is like $16, $17 to send out, so we send about $11,000 worth of boxes. And the community donates those items.
Okay.
So we actually are very thankful for the Romeo community because they raise a lot of money for us. The Wendy's and Romeo did a thing where between like the hours of 5 and 8, 15% of all their sales went to us to help raise money for us. So we helped send those packages out. So we're like, hey, we raised $6,000. We're still like $4,000 short. And the community came through in 3 hours.
And that's because we're originally based in
we're
Romeo?
Based out of Romeo.
But you represent the entire state.
All of Detroit. We're the Detroit area. We actually have another chapter.
The Motor City chapter.
Yeah. We have chapters all over. We have another chapter in Michigan. They're out in by Grand Rapids.
Okay.
And so we actually have different districts. We have chapters all over the United States. So like for me, I lived in Washington, D.C. I came to Michigan, found the nearest chapter and joined them. And so you can train, you know, if I moved again, I could go any other chapter.
It's nice to know there's a sisterhood waiting for you.
Yes. And so we actually have a chapter in Toledo, and a lot of those ladies, they come up for us too, and they'll support us in events because some of them are from Michigan and they live in Ohio. So they come up and they'll join us when we do different things. Or we'll go down there and support them. They do a Veterans Day parade down there also. So we'll go down there and, you know, go in the parade with them, or they'll come up here and they'll do events with us. They'll join our meetings. They'll, you know, we try to stay active. And even though there are generations of Marines, like we're all different ages, we all relate to one thing.
To say again, a veteran, a Marine in World War II, mm-hmm. and she's still with us, bless her, mm-hmm. and bless us for having her. But and that generational knowledge being transferred on.
Yes, and it's really neat to listen to them talk about how the Marine Corps, like when they, you know, so in the Marine Corps, women started serving. This is the 100-year anniversary of women serving in the military. 1918 is the year that women started serving in the military, you know, like period. So this year marks 100 years of women in service. Now in the Marine Corps, it's officially 70 years. This is our 70-year anniversary of women. They started a women's reserve in 1948.
Okay.
And, you know, that's when women were officially recognized in the Marine Corps. Now, if you've heard in Marine Corps history, we have Opha Mae Johnson. She's the first woman Marine. She dressed as a man, posed as a man to serve, but she was actually a woman. And so the Women Marines Association is also, we're doing a drive now to get her like a memorial because she has an unmarked gravesite. Not many people knew about Opha Mae Johnson. We know her because in boot camp, they go over the history of women Marines. And so we know who she is. And so she doesn't really have anything to symbolize like being the first woman Marine. So we're actually raising funds throughout all of the Women Marines Association to get a memorial for her. And we actually went to her cemetery. We couldn't find her grave because it was unmarked and they didn't know where in the cemetery it was. Well, thankfully, this was like a couple years ago. Thankfully, they found it because most of her family is gone. And they found it, and now they want to erect a memorial for her, which is awesome. You know, a lot of these women like Sally, you know, were trailblazers for women because, you know, women couldn't do a lot of things then that we can do now. You know, times have changed. But with Sally, it's neat because you hear about the women, you know, like Rosie the Riveter. And she just passed away in January. And you have women like Marianne, who were one of the first women in their occupational field to do things. You know, when I joined in 2002, Iraq was happening, and a lot of people talk about, you know, women in infantry and things. I'm like, you know, women were in infantry. It wasn't maybe not so much recognized, but they weren't part of infantry units, but we're still out there carrying a rifle, a pistol sight piece. When fire comes, you're shooting. You're firing that rifle downrange. And so I always laugh when people are like, oh, women want to go on the front lines and do this, that. And I'm like, women are on the front lines. I might have been carrying a camera and a rifle, but I'm still there getting, you know, you're still in that threat of being shot.
And if you're defending your country and there's somebody who's not, who happens to be a male, how do you turn your nose up at a, I'm not saying this to you. Yeah. This is Mark's rhetorical moment. Here you are answering the call.
Yeah.
Whose place is it to say anything negative towards you?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this on the way here, too, is there were 9 women killed in 2005, and one of my friends was killed. We were all there. And, you know, when such a big event happens in your life, it impacts you for the rest of your life. So, my friend's name was Ramona Valdez. We called her Maddie. She was with a female search team. They did a bunch of different things. But, you know, you see somebody and then 8 hours, they're gone. And the last time you see them, you don't think that's the last time you're ever going to see them. And you reflect on that and you think, man, if I had known, maybe I would have hugged her a little tighter or whatever. And you carry, you know, it's been 13 years. I still carry that with me. Like, I think about her all the time. And I think, man, would she be proud of me today? Like, am I doing a good job to let her legacy live on? You know, she never had kids. She was married, but she didn't have any kids. And, you know, she was actually going to get out of the Marine Corps when she came home. I mean, we were not far away from coming home. And so that, I think, was the heartbreaker, too. And she was going to get out and become a state trooper. And she talked about it. And she wanted to serve outside of the Marine Corps, her community. And you think about those things like, man, she had a life planned and now it's gone. So what can I do to help her memory live on, to help these women's memory live on? And so I think, well, how can I serve? So when I joined the Women Marines Association, I thought, okay, we still honor these women. And they do a scholarship for those 9 fallen women. Through the Women Marines Association, we do give a scholarship out in their honor. When it's the anniversary of her death, a lot of our friends, we actually still get together or we'll talk about it. And they actually in New York named a street after Maddie because she was from the Bronx, New York. So last year they actually named a street after her. And they had a big event. And so a lot of us went out there to honor her. And her mom actually was there, and I hadn't seen her since the funeral. So, you know, it was really rough. But at the age of 20, when you lose one of your good friends in such a traumatic way, it's hard. And that brings up a lot of other issues. But I will tell you, no matter your age or generation gap or whatever, in the Marine Corps, we all relate in some way, no matter what war or events you go through. We can all relate.
Let me ask you.
Sure.
It's the 100th anniversary of women in the military, mm-hmm. but 70th anniversary
mm-hmm. of women Marines. Yep.
You planning anything with the?
We are in November. We're doing a big dinner for the Marine Corps, like and for our birthday. But
the Marine Corps birthday.
Yeah. And so February actually marked 70 years of
Okay.
Yep. So our last meeting was like our anniversary meeting. That was in February. And then this year in general, we're just celebrating 100 years of women in the military. Okay. And in August, we have our Women Marines Association conference. And
where?
That's going to be in Washington, D.C. It changes every year. So our last conference was in Portland 2 years ago. And then this year it will be in Washington, D.C. And we have women coming from all over, women Marines coming from all over the United States, even overseas. It's a week long. We do conference, like we do classes on just different things, leadership. You can take the classes and then we do like a tour. They have the Marine Corps Museum in Quantico. So we'll actually be doing a tour of the Marine Corps Museum since a lot of people have not been out there.
Now, how many people from the Motor City chapter?
I believe there's four of us going.
Okay.
I'm not really too sure yet, but there'll be a couple hundred of us there.
Okay.
So yeah, it's in DC and it's starts the 28th and they'll be there through Labor Day weekend. That Monday it ends Labor Day. September.
So you've got a busy period. The golfing events.
Yeah. So 2 weeks later we have the golf tournament, and so like I said, we're in the beginning stages. We just secured the venue. We're working on getting our information packets and the registration site up. So once that is available, people can register for the golf tournament. We're getting trying to get sponsors, you know, for the golf tournament. And
you haven't got all your sponsors yet.
No, actually, we're going to be just starting to go out there and hit the ground running and get sponsors.
Who are you looking for in general?
In general, really... we look at, you know, other military organizations, but a lot of it that comes from the community are nonprofit, anyone who supports the military. I mean, we have small businesses.
In exchange for that, you do what?
We actually will do, we're printing banners and stuff. We'll have signs. We'll have, we'll recognize them at the golf tournament. Like, hey, they are, here's one of our sponsors. We'll have thank you gifts.
And I didn't state this in the beginning. We didn't go into, but you are officially 501c3.
Yes, we are.
So people who are donating,
yes,
sponsoring the event.
We can give you a letter that you donated to. We can give you the necessary information that you need because you donated to us. Yeah, so we are a nonprofit. We run off donations. We don't get funded, you know, from the Women Marines, the national chapter. We're actually, everything is donations that we receive or funds that we raise. We use that money in turn to turn around and give it back to the community. And we do spend a lot of money to give back to the community just because they're so good to us. We want to give back to them too. And not just veterans. Like I said, we do things through food banks, schools. We get so much support from all walks of life. It's wonderful. There is a great coffee shop in Romeo. They're called Rule 62. The owner, she's amazing. She does a program called like buy a cup, give a cup. So you can buy a cup of coffee and if someone can come in and maybe they can't afford it, she'll give them a cup of coffee for free. She does fundraisers, silent auction to help raise money for our chapter. And we turn around, we did the packing party. We sent the stuff for the troops. We do donut hour at the VA at least 4 to 5 times a year. And what we do then is we'll sit with the veterans and just talk to them, have a cup of coffee, donuts. Everyone's invited to that. You don't have to be, like I said, in the military. You support the military, come out, just sit down with them. Because, you know, some people don't have family or they don't have people who come visit them. And we actually have a nurse. There's a nursing home there, too. So, I mean, it's nice to be remembered. Even if you don't talk about the military, we can talk about sports. I go and love college football. We can go talk about football. We can talk about baseball. Food. I'm a big foodie, so everyone talks to me and asks me about restaurants. So I give my food recommendations or I even show them my food pictures or whatever. It's nice to just have someone to talk to, even if it's for an hour, you know? And
people from the community who have loved ones, particularly female loved ones in the Corps, who would like to see them not just attended to by themselves and their, but could reach out to you.
Yes.
And you guys, what, I don't know, sponsor or just say, hey, been in your boots, wanted to let you know we're thinking of
you. So, I mean, if anyone you know, you wanted, if you're a female veteran or a woman Marine and you're living in the Detroit metro area, we love to have people come to meetings just to see what we're all about. Even if you're just a female veteran and you just want someone to talk to, you can always reach out to us and we're always available. We love to engage in the community, even, like I said, if it's a veteran of any service, you know, because at the VA, you have everybody. We love to just talk to them and let them know, hey, we didn't forget you. We know you're here. We want to just make you feel like you're home. You know what I mean? Like, how nice is it to come to some place and somebody knows your name? It's like Cheers. Like, hey, I haven't seen you in a month. What's going on? Like, how is your treatment going? How is life going? How is, you know, your counseling session? How is life? And it's nice to feel welcome. And that's what I feel like Mary Ann has done such a beautiful job the last 6-7 years as chapter president. She has done so much.
And we want to tip our hat and salute Mary Ann.
Yes.
I pronounced her last name.
Merritt.
Okay. Because her middle, anyway, we just want to recognize Mary Ann. Merritt served originally back in the 70s.
Yes. And she was the first in her field. She was an electrician and high voltage electrician, I believe. Yeah. And she was climbing those poles and doing, you know, climbing the electric poles and doing all that stuff. And then she ended up going over to GM and worked there for 30 years. Her and her husband's a retired Army vet. And he retired from, he was in the Army and he retired from GM also. But she is so active. She's the driving force behind this chapter. She, you know, we had other presidents before her and they all did a phenomenal job. I've only seen what Mary Ann has done. And from the 2 years I've been around, 2.5 years I've been around Mary Ann, just the number of people she knows that love Mary Ann, that love all of our people in our chapter. They know, you know, everybody, they know us. It's because of her. I feel like a majority of it comes from her, but our chapter, the women in our chapter, we come from all walks of life. Again, one thing, sisterhood, that's what we all have in common is the Marine Corps. And they all give back in some way. All of our time is volunteered. We're not paid to do anything. We're a nonprofit. Everything that you see that comes from us is all out of our own time. And we do it because we want to. And I think, like we said before, we became, you know, on air. I left a really good job to pursue my passion, and our passion in the Women Marines is people. I won't say just specifically cater toward women, but we want to push out there that we support you. We know what women go through in the military. It can be hard at times. Some women don't like to talk about their service time, but we all share that common bond, and people is at the heart of like what we do. And just to let people know, we appreciate them, active duty, retired, veteran. We appreciate your service. Our auxiliary, they're amazing. They do great things in the community alongside with us. Without them, we probably couldn't do a lot of what we do also, because they're supporting us. They go out in the community. They find us sponsors. They, you know, everyone has a part in our chapter, and they all do their job great. So when Mary Ann approached me to become the president, I was very terrified because I've never done anything this big on this level. I've never been so engaged in something as I have been since I met them. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll think about it. And then it was like, hey, Rose, you're still going to be chapter president. I'm like, sure. Sure, Johnny on the spot. But I knew I had a big role. I know I have big shoes to fill, not just from Mary Ann, but from past presidents who are still part of our chapter who told me, hey, you're going to do great. Don't worry about it. You've got a great team. You've got great members. And I do. I'm very thankful. When I walked into this role, you know, it was just February. I had no idea what I was doing. Mary Ann's definitely been great at helping me navigate my way through. Other members have been awesome to help me, like, hey, don't forget to do this. Hey, we need to do that. They're setting me up for success. And I know whenever I walk away from this as the chapter president, I will be a lot wiser, a lot smarter. I think going from what I was doing to volunteering more, I found more enrichment in things. Like, my life is more fulfilled helping people. So I know I'll take these great tools and move that forward. But, and I think also we have a younger generation of Marines coming. Our mentality is, I will say, their mentality may be a little bit different. Their experiences are different than ours. You know, they're, after I got out, a lot of things in the Marine Corps changed. So to get their input is nice. Because the, you know, times have changed in the Marine Corps in the last 2 or 3 years. I just see it from friends that are in, and I find out, you know, what's going on. But as we are, as we're growing, and we're getting new people coming in, new members, it's nice to hear what they have, you know, their experiences. And we all kind of learn, you know, from each other, not just from the military, but in life things, job wise, networking. You know, we tell each other when there's stuff going on, we post like, hey, there's a job fair, or we got this going on, this event's happening in the area. Hey, do you think, so we do a, we give out a scholarship through our chapter. There's only one Marine ROTC in Michigan, and it's at River Rouge High School, down in Downriver. And, we actually give a scholarship, and, I presented a check to a student last year. She actually went to Howard University. She got a college scholarship to Howard University. So this year I'll present the check again for whichever student they, but it's nice to see these young kids in high school, and they'll ask you, hey, what's it like to be in the Marine Corps? Or especially the women, you know, the girls, they're like, oh, hey, how was it to be a woman in the Marine Corps? I'm like, nothing different than a man, I won't say. I was like, it's been fun. But sometimes it's like, it's nice because they'll talk to you and they're just like, wow. And I'm like, wow, am I getting old, or am I just that, you know? It's like, man, I feel old now.
Experience.
But it's experience. Seasoned, that's what I say. I'm seasoned. But it's so cool just to go out and talk to high school kids. And they're like, oh, so how was the Marine Corps? And what did you do? And I told them, I got to talk to them for like a minute or two. And so when I gave the award, I was like, wow, you're going to Howard. That's wonderful. And I even told them, I remember when I was sitting in your spot in 2002 when I graduated, I had no idea what I wanted to do in life. I'm 33 and still have no idea what I want to do in life. And I'm just joking. But I remember, man, what can I do? The world's changing. You know, things have changed so much. And where's my place? And I said, the best thing I could have done was join the Marine Corps. It gave me a family for life, and it gave me great skills. It paid for college, and now here I am. And I say, you don't have to be monetarily successful. I'm successful in life because, A, I did my time, but the skills I learned pushed me so far, and I'm doing really well. Like, I'm in a good spot in life. So,
for those who wish to join in, get to know you better, perhaps, the Women's Marine Association, yes, Motor City Chapter, can definitely be found on Facebook.
Yep.
WomenMarineAssociation.org.
Yes. Yeah, you can go on. Actually, if you go on to our WomenMarines.org, we actually have like a history page. You can read over like when we started. You can read about our history. You can learn about, you know, our president of the Women Marines Association. She's located out of D.C., you can read all of the you can read the biographies of just like a lot of the people that are, you know, the heads of the WMA. They've been keeping this going, like I said, since 1960, where they started from one little tiny group to chapters all over the world. So,
well, thank you, Rose Muth.
Thank you for inviting me here.
Appearing on Impact, people making an impact in their community. This is definitely the Women's Marine Association Motor City Chapter, to be found most assuredly on Facebook, but I'm going to let you get it right. The website, the other website,
www.womenmarines.org.
There you have it, and you can find their chapter once you get to that page. Again, Rose Muth here on WHFR Impact. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
And you are tuned in to Impact, the show about people and events, organizations making a difference in their community. And this is your host, Mark Hall. We're joined today with two people who are doing just that. You may very well be aware of what's going on in Flint, Michigan with the water crisis. Well, when I say is going on, I mean just that. A lot of people have assumed that the crisis is over. It is not. These two people are a part of a group, 501c3, that is working for the people of Michigan, the people of Flint, and seeking to spread the word. So today we're joined by Mel Joy and Carrie Weber. Mel and I go back a few years, and I'm just meeting Carrie now, and they lead a group called Flintstock. So ladies, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Great, now that I got it right, Carrie Weber.
Yes.
And thank you for coming on Impact today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank
Tell me about Flintstock, please.
Flintstock originally started in 2016, and our goal was to put on shows, events, festivals, everything including water drives to help spread awareness and help educate the public and to bring in support to the community. We had initially wanted to help with replacing contaminated water appliances, help with medical needs, and we've managed to do that. We've at least managed to try and spread the word. But with the community still needing water so badly, and not even a fraction of the community being served, they still can't drink from their taps. We've been trying to push to get volunteers on the ground to help distribute. We are trying to bring water in to ensure that the residents have safe water to consume, to wash, to bathe. So that's kind of where we're at right now, is just really trying to let people know that Flint is far from being fixed. It has a very, very long way to go. This isn't going away anytime soon. And that it's not just Flint. It is everywhere. I highly encourage, I know that I'm starting this one off early here, but I highly encourage everybody to test their water. From personal research, I've discovered that over 70 communities are acknowledged in Michigan alone living with unsafe water. There's over 5,000 acknowledged across the nation. Those are just the ones being acknowledged. I mean, it should not be anybody's normal to have to drink bottled water. It shouldn't have to be anybody's normal to have to use a water filter. We have so many things going on with our natural resources right now, and people are failing to realize that we need water to live. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And Carrie is basically boots on the ground. She's there. She's living it. And so I am grateful for the alliance that I have with her, for her knowledge and her wanting to help speak out and let everybody know what's going on.
Now, how many people have you personally, the numbers about how many have been affected, don't know sometimes where to go to get the right numbers. Flintstock, you're on top of this. You reach out to the community.
I reach out through members of the community who are actually there and able to personally help. My thing is just trying to spread awareness and put together events to, you know, bring people together to network. And like with women like Carrie, and it's mostly women, sorry guys. But it's the women who are out there, you know, spending their lives.
Mothering the
yes,
community.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's, oh wow, I just lost myself. You have to edit that.
My assumption has always been, you have to assume it is the entire city. I know there's been a ton of focus on the small children, and there should be because of the brain damage it does do. But there's more. The state of Michigan has focused only on the little kids. This is our teenagers. It's our elderly. It's people middle age. It's people between 20 and 50. Anyone that was exposed to that lead water, regardless of age, has been affected. I know my husband was 45, for example. Our youngest child was 15. But they still are terribly affected by the lead in water. And that has been missed. We've begged the state to address all people of the community. and they're not.
Now, we were talking earlier, if you are a Flint resident, you were there, you're concerned about your loved ones, your health, and you say, it's enough's enough, I can drink this bottle of water, but as far as taking a bath or a shower, I still don't want that stuff on me. I have family in Missouri, wherever.
Right.
And you go ahead and move. It's my understanding now that the state cuts off support or yes. doesn't facilitate your fixing your home, your plumbing?
If you leave Flint and even move to Burton, Swartz Creek, even if you stay here in the state of Michigan.
Even if you stay here in the state of Michigan.
Even in the state of Michigan, but you move outside of Flint. You are immediately dropped out of the Medicaid expansion they sent up. And this is children as well. They are immediately dropped out of that for not having a Flint address. It does not matter they were poisoned in Flint. They are dropped. It goes back to income only. And these children stop getting support.
So how, in order to get aid, you have to leave your loved ones in the crossfire?
Yes.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, none of it makes any sense. And our daughter is 18 now. She is a Flint kid. She is a lead poisoned and ill Flint kid. And even at that...
I'm sorry.
We are too. It's hit... she has a lot of very serious medical issues. And she will for the rest of her life now. And they had canceled her insurance, her Medicaid, which there should be no question. She's under 21. And it's taken me 3 months to get that fixed again. So for 3 months, I have a child that has liver issues and kidney issues from her lead poisoning that saw no doctor.
You know, I was just reading this week all their discoveries going on. They say it's probably true kids are smarter because the number of brain cells you have stops developing at 13, they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm getting this fact wrong, please contact me, Mark Hall at WHFR.FM. We welcome your input. But this was the recent thing they were sharing about youth, childhood, teenage years, your brain development. We knew it was the children. Now to get impacted by this and not have a means of getting help.
Right.
Come on.
Right. And my husband never qualified for help because he was 45.
So just write him off.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And he had an eye stroke because he's lead poisoned. We found all of everything that happened in my family started in June of 15. And went on between June and the end of August of 2015. Nobody knew there was lead in the water yet. We had our daughter down in Ann Arbor for a hip injury from an auto accident. They did a bone scan on her and pulled me out of the room immediately because they had found lead lines on every growth plate. And it's a visible line in her bones where there is now lead.
So the water, the city now, who, has taken over responsibility of the water?
The city, yeah.
The city has got it. And moving forward, the filtration, what's going on with that? Anybody?
They have only replaced 6,700 out of about 30,000 lead lines. They're not even going to touch the mains. The entire infrastructure needs to be replaced. I do want to backtrack for a half second, though. When we were when you guys were discussing about the doctors, there are doctors that if they know that you have been affected by the water, they will refuse to see you.
Yes.
Why?
Or drop you as a patient.
Because anything that they find out or discover, they can potentially lose their license for basically being a whistleblower. You know, they have to deal with the state. They're licensed by the state. So if they have anything to say against the state, they are looking at losing their licensing. That's the same thing when testing was being done with the different universities where they would keep everything hush-hush. because they were afraid of losing their grant money. They were afraid of losing their funding. So people knew what was going on, but nobody wanted to be that person to speak out because it could affect their school, their jobs.
So here we go into 2018, and, you know, out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people,
yes.
A lot of times. And the way to, a lot of people are talking about, well, there's elections going on, there's school shootings, there's many things going on in the world, but that doesn't change what you're living with every day in Flint.
Not at all. And it, I had somebody actually ask me a week or two ago, and it was just a curious question, if lead poisoning was like arsenic or other kinds of things you can get out of water, would it eventually just clear itself from my daughter or husband's body? Lead does not work that way. It's there. It stays there. The even worst part of it for all these kids and teens in Flint, if they have children and they have lead in their bones like my daughter does, which it's also affected her liver, it's affected her kidneys now. We just found that out right around Thanksgiving. When she has children, if she chooses to, which at 16, my daughter's making choices about whether or not to ever bear kids. Because the lead, when the calcium leaches from her bones for her baby, the lead does too. And that will not stop until her great-grandchild. It will be four generations of lead passed from mother to child.
This is why education on a subject is so important, because, you know, a lot of us outside of Flint were just, that's bad. This is going to, we knew what lead poisoning, the words were to eat paint as a kid.
Right.
But as far as generational.
Yeah.
That's news. And that's scary. That's 16 making this. I don't want to have kids because I don't want to pass this on.
And that has been her determination at this point, is that she would rather adopt than to do this to a child.
So one of the things that's important about what you're doing is this education.
Yes.
And that's why we want to talk about Flintstock. Tell us more. Where can people go and learn about you, what you're doing?
Well, we have two pages on Facebook. One is Flintstock 2016. The other one is Flintstock.org. And I do try to keep people updated on things going on around in the area. I try to avoid the politics. I try to avoid any divider. The whole point of Flintstock and what we're trying to do is to bring people together. And that's another reason I have music, because music brings people together. I don't want to overwhelm people. It does get under my skin that the focus is the lead and the copper. Flint water has just Flint water. I mean, there are places in Detroit that have got higher levels of lead than areas of Flint. Mm-hmm. And that's scary, but people aren't seeing that. But it's the Flint has got over 200 contaminants in their water currently. That's bacteria, that's heavy metals, that is just straight out poison. And they're being told, oh, the water's fine. Go ahead, you can drink it.
Again.
Yeah. And around, it was December, it was the end of December. And Carrie actually had to go through this herself, where she had a white slime film coming out of her faucets mm-hmm. that looked like curdled milk floating on the top of her water. You have these filters that you can't, they're not even good for 2 weeks. They are breeding grounds for bacteria. You know, how can you try and how is it that, okay, well, we switched the water source back over to GLEWA, which we'll get into that one.
GLEWA River.
GLEWA is the Great Lake Water Authority, and which the majority of Southeast Michigan runs off of that line. That comes from Detroit. another scary thing we can go ahead and talk about later, because otherwise I'll be so sidetracked. But you cannot tell me that just because the water was switched over, water is still going through these lead pipes. We have known that lead is toxic to human, to people, to any breathing creature since the 1920s. It was not made into law until the early 1980s. I want to say 1983, 84, where it was lead being taken out of paint and out of toys. However, we still have, you know, dining utensils and plates and stuff that have lead in them. That's scary. So anyways, we've known for 40 plus years, heck, we've known for almost 100 years that lead is toxic to a person, to any living being. However, we've never upgraded or changed over the infrastructure and have allowed our water sources to go through lead lines. That's not even touching on the water mains. You know, they're crumbling, breaking down as they're breaking down. Bacteria is being released. As those lines are breaking down, the wherever these lines are buried, you have concerns of cross-contamination where, you know, your sewer lines could try and sewer water can be crossing over with your drinking water. You know, there's so many factors being plated. So why is it that we've been smart enough to put a ban on paints and things that kids are going to put in their mouth and things like that, but we're allowing our water sources to continue to go through these lines, through these broken lines. Even our water mains are soldered together with lead.
Right.
So why have they not been upgraded? They've known about it for 100 years. What do our tax dollars go for? What do our water bills go for? I'm pretty sure there's a fee on there that says for maintenance and upgrade and everything, upkeep on those bills. Where's that money going? How come it has not been done?
And the way they've handled it is they have counted on corrosion control to coat the inside of these pipes and to hold, you know, and it literally coats it. It's almost an iridescent looking kind of film. And it literally coats the inside of these lead pipes and holds any bacteria, keeps the lead, and it keeps the water from literally touching the lead. This is what this country is basing its safe water on.
Yes, this is national. This is, like I said, Flint is not insulated. It's not just Flint. So when we come on these shows and we start talking, I want people to realize Flint is not fixed. It's trying to be swept under the rug like it has since 1953, heck, actually since the 1930s. They've had water issues there, and it's constantly being swept under the rug. I want to keep Flint in the know, and I want people to realize that this is not isolated. This is Detroit, Toledo, Houston, areas across our nation with a 100-year-old infrastructure. We are all being poisoned by this. And when she was talking about the film that gets put on there and they're cleaning chemicals, keep this in mind, chemicals is going through our water and through these lines. Chemicals are toxic. So why are they allowing us to consume those too? But it's supposed to be coating our lines. It's supposed to be killing this or, you know, killing bacteria. Or
and it's case. Supposed to be safe for humans.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
According to the EPA.
According to the EPA and the MDEQ, everybody in Flint was just stupid and the water was fine.
And so if you notice, EPA has actually raised their what they consider to be safe levels of lead. See, the only reason that lead and copper are continually being talked about is because that's the only thing the EPA has a standard on. We don't have a standard on arsenic. We don't have a standard on chloroform. We don't have a standard on the opiates or anything else that's running through our water systems. So that is the only thing that you are seeing ever or hearing ever being spoke about is copper and lead.
I'm glad you mentioned opiates because I've seen where doctors will tell you if you're through with a medication, please don't flush it.
Right.
Crush it, put in coffee grounds, dispose it, and let the coffee grounds dissolve it away. But just drop in your medication, your old medications, because they have an expiration date.
Right.
They'll mutate into something else. You put them in the water, you're going to be taking them again, or somebody downriver from you is going to be taking them.
Yes, because they cannot be filtered out.
So this is
scary.
And if you look at it, I mean, and I cannot reinforce enough, two of my most interesting contacts through this whole nightmare, one was from Ireland and one was from England, and two folks, one from each country, contacted me asking me if I could help them figure out how to go about in their country getting their water tested. And, you know, I know how to do it in Flint and in most municipalities with just a little bit of digging, I can figure it out. We did figure it out overseas. But that was really rather eye-opening, how they do it, who do you go to. And this person had no knowledge. The things we take for granted, like our water reports, I used to always call those a nap and an envelope. I never read them either.
It didn't mean something back in the day.
And now I never let one go. I don't just read it. I read it. I study it. If there's something on there I haven't seen before that they're treating the water with, I'm looking it up and checking into it. What is it? No, this isn't exciting. No, I'm not a science person. I had no contact at all with chemistry or engineering or anything like that. Nothing. No contact.
Where would I find it in my water bill? Do you have any suggestions?
It's not your water bill. It's actually a water report you get. It should be quarterly. And it will list on your water report, it shows everything they've treated your water with.
Do you have to make a request for this?
No, should be automatically mailed out.
And you say it's in your water report, it contains information about...
About what they're using to treat it. See, and that's how Leanne Walters, thank God, noticed reading one of our water reports. There was no corrosion control in it.
And Leanne Walters is?
From Flint. She's the mom that blew this wide open. She found out just looking at the water report, they did not put corrosion control in. That's why the lead started leaching. According, the MDEQ told Flint three times they didn't need corrosion control. That's how all this started.
Let me get this straight. MDEQ is Michigan
Department of Environmental Quality.
Okay, that's Michigan's equivalent of the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes.
Okay.
And quite a group they are. But yeah, every household should receive a municipal water report, and it will say drinking water report or something. It always says important on it. Comes the same way your taxes do, so it's mailed to you like in that format. So I do now read mine to make sure what they're treating the water with, if they're treating the water with anything, and what levels they're treating. It also shows any tests they're doing. But always remember, when they're testing the water, they're testing it at the plant. They're not testing it outside of.
It's great at the source. What is it downstream, when you're opening your tap?
Exactly.
Which is exactly why we try to reinforce everybody. Everybody needs to test your water. I don't care if you live in the country. I don't care if you have a well, a city, whoever your water source, I don't care. Because I was on a station last year, and the women who happened to be on the show were from Gaylord. And they're having some serious issues with their water, and Gaylord's all well. But this is because of ground contamination. So you have to figure that if you're near a major city, you know, even the suburbs, you have all those, all the different corporations, the auto industry, food plants. They actually, I was reading something, I didn't have a chance to really read it before we left, but they were saying about additional contaminants being found here in Detroit, the chemicals that are used for food processing, for auto, for the different industries. So they're finding even more contaminants in the water here. And so, I mean, people really need to be aware. I mean, this is something that you need. Water, it's life. You know, you don't survive without it. You need to ensure that what you're consuming is good. I mean, good for you. I mean, that's just like the majority of the residents in Flint. I'm sure there's plenty of residents who still aren't really aware of what's going on, be it because they don't have a computer or a television. You know, it's so important to know what you're living with.
Just sitting down with you, we've talked for some time now, but just sitting down with you today, I'm gathering more than I have. People after this broadcast, or who come back after this podcast, want to get in touch with you, find out more about Flintstock, how?
They can contact me on Facebook. Like I mentioned earlier, we have the two Flintstock pages, the Flintstock.org, the Flintstock 2016. They can also find me as Mel Joy, is my personal page.
Personal Facebook page.
Yes. Now, I don't know if giving numbers out is good or not, but if need be, I mean, I definitely respond.
They'll find that you are an official 501c3.
Yes. Yes. You can look up on Michigan 501c or 501s.gov, I believe is what it's listed as. And if you type in Flintstock Productions, it is out of Durand, Michigan, is where we're based. And yes, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. So yes, we are totally legal
and
transparent.
Website?
Website is currently down right now. We are trying to rebuild and restore.
So if somebody wanted to contribute in their fashion of doing so, was building a website or helping fund?
I would love it. I would be grateful, very, very grateful, because any way, any means for us to be able to help other people living with this, and for those who want to be able to help Flint and other communities, definitely.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on to talk about Flintstock 2016 and Flintstock.org, or just Flintstock.org, one word?
How's it going? It's typed on there as Flintstock.org. Okay. For the Facebook page.
We have Mel Joy and Carrie Weber. Thank you. And
and people can always reach me on Facebook as well. My name is spelled K-E-R-I. Last name is Weber with two B's.
So please, Flintstock. Flint is a real issue. Flintstock is addressing it. And when they put on shows, you'll have a great time. Again, Carrie, Mel, thank you for coming to Impact. Thank you for tuning in to WHFR.FM. Thank you.
Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Guys and dolls, you are at the Malt Shop with Daddy G on WHFR, and we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.
One, two, three, o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock.